KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
All the time. Working and living at the Pike Place Public Market, we know the vegetable guy, the fish guy, the meat person, the cheesemonger, the dairy product lady. We know them all personally. And that's how we kind of feel about public radio, although we've never met many of the commentators. We feel like we know them personally. You know, they're our old friends because we listen to them every day. It's always KOW.
I like traveling down to South America when we listen to that conversation. That's some nice music. I feel that way about you when I meet you on the streets and we shake hands. He says, I'm a listener. You say I'm a listener or something. I feel that same way. We're part of a big community. And that's why we work together a couple days a year to support this public radio service. I am Steve Scheer. Katie Sewell is here.
Hello.
The folks who hand us interesting things said, you know what, we're going to offer this, Steve. If you pledge at the $200 level, we will offer one of five pairs of tickets to see Susan Orlean at Benaroya Hall, May 14th, 2013. She's a novelist. She's also a nonfiction writer. Rin Tin Tin, The Life and the Legend, The Orchid Thief, which was made into the film adaptation. She's a contributor to The New Yorker, to Rolling Stone, to Vogue. She is going to be here on May 14th. She'll be a guest in our studios. We're going to talk to her, so you'll be able to hear that conversation, knowing that you are a member in good standing of KUOW, and that by pledging $200, you'll have a pair of tickets to go see her that night as she talks even more and in depth about her work. That's a twofer, my friends, that you get by calling 206-543-9595 and showing your support to KUOW.
Sounds pretty good. 206-543-9595.
You'll get a lot of twofers in this world, Katie.
1-866-NPR-KUOW. That's true. We should get more, but we don't. But here's an opportunity to claim one of five pairs to see Susan Orlean. Is it Orlean?
Susan Orleans.
Orleans. Orlean.
Yeah.
At Benaroya Hall. 514 this very year.
Yeah.
Susan so give Orlean. Us a call. 206-543-9595. I know. That confused me, and you could see how I dragged there for a moment trying to figure that out. But that's live radio for you, folks. And you can participate in live radio right now by making the phone behind us ring in the background. 1-866-NPR-KUOW. It is true. You kind of do know us, don't you? You spend a lot of time with us. And the thing that's so wonderful about being on the radio is that when you are out in the community and people recognize you or recognize your voice, you get to hear all these stories about what you heard, what the listener heard, and how that spurred them into action.
Well, and I do mean it. I recognize you when you shake hands because, oh, yeah, maybe you called in, maybe you wrote a letter. I love meeting folks who spend a lot of time emailing us because a bunch of folks who spend time emailing us, we read all the emails, even the ones that are not as pleasant as the others. And it's great to meet people, and that's because we are all part of this together, right?
Yeah, and it's the same thing when you pledge your support and you send us a message. It's the same thing, all of us getting to know each other. Because when you're on the radio, it can feel like a bubble. But really, it's a giant community out there. You're a part of that community, and we ask you to be a part of that community also with your pledge of support. 206-543-9595. If you've ever learned anything on this radio station that has slightly changed your perspective on the world or the book you read or the next activity you did or the kind of people you were hanging out with, give us a call, 206-543-9595, or go online, kuow.org. And for those of you farther away, give us a call toll-free, 1-866-NPR-KUOW, 1-866-677-5869. Be like Madeline of Seattle, who's a new Evergreen member, saying, keep up the good work. Help us keep up the good work. Give us a call. 206-543-9595.
One of them is called Cornus alternifolia. Whoa, plant name is telling you what it is. Alternate leaves. And the other one is Cornus controversa, which is, I always say, it's because it's controversial that it would have alternate leaves.
I've really had great success lately with evergreen huckleberries. The ones that I've planted in as plugs just a few years ago have really made dramatic growth.
Our gardening crew, they're going to be here in a little bit, talk about gardening, take your calls at the other numbers. But first, scientists at the University of Washington have found a way to test and detect the symptoms of lysosomal diseases before symptoms begin to appear in infants. Well, what is that and what does it mean? Dr. Michael Gelb is a professor of chemistry and biochemistry at the University of Washington. Thank you for coming in and talking to us.
Sure, it's a pleasure.
So I guess we better start with that. Lysosomal, am I saying it right? Lysosomal?
Yes, lysosomal storage diseases.
And what are they?
So every cell in your body has a little compartment called the lysosome, which is sort of the recycling center. And it's filled with about 40 different enzymes that break down components of the cell that the cell no longer needs. And then every once in a while a baby is born that's deficient in one of these 40 enzymes, and then they build up the component that's supposed to be broken down, and it builds up and the trash can gets full and eventually the cell dies. And these are very serious, often fatal diseases in infants.
And these are the babies might be born with them and they're going to be serious and fatal right in their first few weeks.
Yeah, often. Sometimes it's a grayscale. Sometimes babies are born with a severe infantile form that might be life-threatening in the first year of life or less. Sometimes it's a medium, sort of a medium-grade effect that could affect people as adults. So it's kind of a grayscale. And the idea is to catch the babies early when treatment options are possible. The whole thing about screening for these diseases is made possible by the development of treatments. Yeah.
What's the breakthrough by which these screenings are now possible?
There's a few developments. A guy named Nestor Shimolis in Argentina showed that these lysosomal enzymes are still active in these dried blood spots. When babies are born, they put blood from the baby on a piece of paper, let it air dry, and the enzymes are still active. And then we came along and showed that it's possible to rapidly and inexpensively assay a set of these enzymes, let's say 10 of these enzymes, sort of very quickly using mass spectrometry, which is an analytical chemistry technique.
Did you know when you went into biochemistry and chemistry, you'd be working on little babies and their diseases?
I had no idea. I got into this when my wife was pregnant with our second child. She was 40, and they did amniocentesis. And I asked the nurse what they did, and it was very limited. And I became interested as an enzymologist and fascinated with being able to detect more of these diseases.
So amniocentesis is a limited test in that sense from what we are.
Yeah, usually they check for Down syndrome and spina bifida and maybe something else if there's a family history, but usually not much else. So
this is a big deal to be able to check for these other diseases as well. Rare, are they rare diseases?
Yeah, fortunately they're rare. As a group, they're about 1 in 6,000. In terms of the treatable lysosomal storage diseases, let's say 1 in about 50,000. So very rare.
Before these breakthroughs in treatment, how were they being treated, if at all?
They were being treated by just critical care medicine. You know, if the baby goes into crisis, they would try to pull them out. But basically, no way to treat them other than crisis management and constant supervision by nurses and doctors.
Yeah. Well, if we're dealing at the cellular level, what's changed? I mean, are we able to treat these diseases to a point where they're either manageable or they are cured?
Well, they're not really cured. This is part of the controversy. You know, some metabolic diseases that we screen for are treatable to a large extent. Lysosomal storage diseases are treated to a variable extent. You know, the baby on a scale of 1 to 10 might go from a 1 to an 8 or sometimes a 1 to a 4. So despite this variability in treatment, if you take a survey among all of the parents that have these sick children, they all vote for newborn screening. And a lot of the screening has been driven not only by the treatment but also by parent-led grassroots politics. Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because though you get the screening and you get the treatment, These are still tough diseases.
Yes, they're very tough diseases. But the treatments can work very well in some cases. I think the key is parents want to give their kids a fighting chance at survival, even though they know the treatment is not perfect.
So what do you have to weigh the costs and benefits of these lysosomal detections then?
Yeah, this is also controversial. The treatment is very expensive. On the other hand, critical care medicine for full-time for an infant is probably arguably more expensive. I think by and large, newborn screening is considered one of the most successful public health programs in terms of saving money. Because if you catch the disease early, you can do something about it. Otherwise, it's expensive to maintain a child in critical care medicine, 24 hours a day.
What do they do? Do you know what they – I know you're not a doctor in that sense. But what do they do to treat these diseases?
There's two options. The one option that's easiest to do is they give you the missing enzyme. So you have a genetic defect. You're born with a genetic mutation that renders this enzyme, this lysosomal enzyme, inactive. And they give you a recombinant form of the enzyme. The enzyme is made in a biological factory, in a sense, and it's purified, and then it's given to you by regular infusion into the bloodstream every 2 weeks for the rest of your life. And the key thing about lysosomal storage diseases, lysosomal enzymes, is that cells have the ability to take up missing enzyme and deliver it properly to the lysosome. This is not true for most genetic diseases. So
I see.
Yeah. So basically giving you the broken enzyme, giving you a good copy of the enzyme by regular infusion.
So for those that are treatable, somebody can grow up with the enzyme and taking the enzyme and survive.
Yes, there's lots of examples of that. Again, it depends on which particular disease. Some are more treatable than others. It's a moving field. The biotechnology industry is engaged in current clinical trials for additional lysosomal storage diseases. It depends on a lot of factors. It depends on the disease type. It depends on how much damage to the baby has already been done prior to birth. Some babies are born, it's too late. Some babies are born, and there's an opportunity to treat them. So,
what's the controversy here? Are people detect the diseases early, and then
there's
opt for abortions?
There's lots of controversies. One controversy is between doctors and parents. Some parents, of course, want to give their kids the best chance possible at survival. Some doctors might think that the treatment has not been proven to be highly effective currently. So arguments between parents and doctors. Concerns about false positives. So if your newborn screen detects a lot of babies that are at risk, but in fact only a small percentage of them are disease positive, you might create a lot of anxiety between parents. So there's all kinds of factors.
So Dr. Michael Gelb is professor of chemistry and biochemistry at the UW. Scientists at the UW have found a way to test and detect the symptoms of these lysosomal storage diseases. What's the next phase here? What happens to integrate some of these screening tests into the broader screening tests that are already administered?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So the politics of newborn screening in the United States, at least, is very interesting. It's state by state. So what happened in New York was a foundation was started based on a child who had a disease called Krabbe disease. And the foundation lobbied very hard in the state of New York for expanding newborn screening in New York for a disease called Krabbe disease. And they tested the assay that we developed for a few years, and they went live with this Krabbe newborn screening testing about 3 years ago. So the second place was in Illinois, where you have parents with a couple of sick kids, twins, and they lobbied hard in Illinois to get 7 lysosomal storage diseases added to the existing panel. And so they're in the middle of a pilot study now. Missouri, New Mexico, Austria, Taiwan, are all contemplating expanding newborn screening. So we're sort of marching through various parts of the United States, one state at a time, one country at a time. It's very controversial. It's the cutting edge of medicine. In terms of there's been some commercialization efforts to bring these newborn screening kits that we've developed to market. Right now, the reagents are synthesized and donated for free to newborn screening labs just to sort of get the process going. So it's all in flux right now. There's a few states that have begun, and we're waiting to see about other places.
Wow, that's fascinating. The power and the uncertainty and the dangers, I guess, of science as it unfolds at the cutting edge, huh?
Yes, I think, you know, a lot of people are going to be watching New York to see what happens with CRADA newborn screening, and some states are going to wait. Some states are going to jump in. You know, we'll know, I think, you know, in about 5, 6, 7 years, it'll all settle down and we'll be left with a screening program in all states that makes the most sense for the diseases that are best dealt with by these methods.
Dr. Michael Gelb is a professor of chemistry and biochem at the University of Washington. Scientists there, Dr. Gelb, have come up with a way to test and detect symptoms of these lysosomal storage diseases before the symptoms begin to appear in infants. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks. It's a pleasure, Steve.
This is Weekday. May I say that my favorite part of this job is because we are attached to this incredible institution, the University of Washington, there are so many scientists, so many thinkers, so many policymakers who come in and talk to us. And we, all of us, we're part of the cutting edge of what's emerging. And we get to hear the ideas and the controversies, and we get to think about them. Well, you know, the University of Washington is a state-funded and grant-funded institution, right? And tuition-funded. And tuition has gone up, and people have to pay that tuition to come to this university. Well, the University of Washington is you know, part of us, but we are a self-sustaining unit of that University of Washington. We raise our own money to be raising our own standards as well, to be part of the community and to be asking questions, to be understanding what's happening in this broad community. To that end, we come to you twice a year, right? You get the connection. And ask you to right now dial 206-543-9595. Dial if you're using one of those old rotary phones, I guess. Or 1-866-677-5869, or pledge online at kuow.org to show your support to public radio.
206-543-9595. It's access to all these amazing thinkers, not just from our own city, but to the entire world even. We've had people from across the world. We have people coming up who work in India, Kenya, working on sex trafficking. We have authors from all over across the United States joining us to share their big ideas. And we have access to all those big ideas and big thoughts because people like you have supported the station in the past. And we're asking you to do your part as well. Some of you are already planning to do it, so why not do it now? 206-543-9595. Go online, kuow.org.
May I say, somebody who does a good job at explaining science, explaining public policy, but also explaining popular culture, Susan Orlean. She's going to be in Seattle on the 14th of May at Ben Arroyo Hall giving a talk. She's also going to be our guest that day. We have 5 pairs of tickets. At the $200 level, you'll get a pair of tickets to go see her at Seattle at Ben Arroyo Hall. Is she Seattle Arts and Lectures? I should not say that before I just spout off like that. But you can get a chance to see her. And you can also show your support to public radio. 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869. If you've been waiting, if you've been sort of thinking about it, it would be so excellent if you called right now. We have to raise $10,000. $6,800 has been raised. Our gardening panel is here to talk to you. They're going to take some phone calls from you, but we need to hear from you right now. Hail, gardening panel. It's good to see you all. I don't know where Marty Wingate is. Perhaps we forgot something, or perhaps she's going to show up, or perhaps we're going to find out, because that's what we do. But Greg Rayburn is here, Vashon Basin Stewart. Hello, sir.
Good morning.
How do you feel? Like, how do you feel being in the midst of the pledge drive? It's always a little weird, isn't it?
Oh no, it's you have to do it.
Yep,
it's very important.
You know who else is here? Lisa Taylor, Children's Education Program Manager at Seattle Tilth, author of Your Farm in the City, a person who's gardened the food gardening world for a long time.
Absolutely.
This is your first experience, though.
This is my first pledge drive, and I love the pledge drive, so it's kind of an honor to be here.
I also love the pledge drive.
I do. I like hearing you guys. I feel like, you know, my family on the radio is just sitting there begging me for money.
Just like at home.
Just like at home. Yep.
The cool part is, though, that since you're here, you can actually just walk right downstairs.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to get down there to the phone rooms.
Yes.
And you can get some Twizzlers or Red Vines. I can't remember which it is that they always have a circular container of red vines or Twizzlers.
Keep those phone workers.
Yeah, got to get them charged.
Got to get them ready.
Keep those folks charged. All right. As you know, I don't need to tell this crowd what an incredible weekend.
Oh my goodness!
Oh, yeah.
So what burst out in your area?
Well, the two things that I really noticed were, one, I was up enjoying some skiing this weekend and saw a butterfly at about 6,000 feet.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was like, it seemed unusual for this time of year, but it was pretty neat to see.
Where were you skiing?
Up at Crystal Mountain. Yeah, it was really nice. So it was like, wow, nothing was in bloom up there, but
no.
Here we have.
Still got those strong knees, huh?
Yeah, strong enough. And the other thing was that observation I made this weekend is that, the pileated woodpeckers are out, you know, making a lot of noise right now. And back in like 2007, we had a windstorm and I lost probably 18-inch diameter Doug fir, and it came down and I was on the ground and I went to saw it up. And when I was sawing it up so that I could upright it and have a snag, as soon as I cut off the top of it, it was one of those lessons learned. It stood itself back up, which is rather alarming when you're cutting it with a chainsaw. But it's that counterbalance of the root wad pulling it back up. But anyway, I ended up with this great, probably about a 15-foot snag that's been slowly ripening for the pileated woodpeckers. And this year, finally, it got to the right point where they are just tearing it apart.
Oh,
it is
cool.
So fun to watch.
Is it safe and reasonable, do you think, to have a snag in the city? You know, if it's safely trimmed and everything, as wildlife
sure.
support?
Sure.
You guys have that at Tilth and around in and around Tilth?
There have been a couple of old trees standing, and you know, if anything comes down, I always grab that and use it as a structure. I think you have to just be careful, knowing that snag may actually fall, and you don't want it to take out the fence or the car or a child. So the thing that popped out at my house this weekend was the mower. I mowed the lawn. But I grass cycle, so it was it was very easy. Mowed it real high and left the grass clippings where they fell, and that was great. And we had a little fire to welcome in spring on Sunday. So
that's
that
pretty
good.
Funny. Yeah, that's what popped out your mower.
Yeah, the mower. And the other thing that I've been noticing, which is surely a sign of things warming up, is the first round of hornets are starting to emerge from their overwintering.
Is that right?
The fertile queens that were produced at the end of last season and overwintered in, you know, the sides of buildings and old snags and duff and that kind of thing are starting to emerge. And those will be the founding queens for this year's colonies. So that's been kind of fun. They're very, very slow moving and very large. So pretty cool.
You had us worried.
She's
what
here.
A surprise to walk in to the station and hear gardener voices on the radio.
And not be yours.
And not be mine, yeah.
Marty Wingate is here. You had us worried.
I
thought that you were trapped in a maze of plants or something.
Or weeds,
or
perhaps.
Weeds.
No, those weeds are decreasing rapidly in the garden with all this good weather, because I'm out there all the time.
Is that what you did over the weekend with the good weather?
I did. I planted, and sorry, Greg, I did plant. I planted, and the sweet peas are coming up in their pot on the porch. Before I transplant them, I see them peeking out.
What's wrong with planting? Why'd you say sorry, Greg?
Greg likes to plant in the fall.
Oh, yeah.
But we are hardwired to plant in the spring. I can't help it.
Holes are there and they must be filled.
Yeah, well, more holes than usual because I'm yanking things out.
Oh, you are?
Oh, yeah, I'm getting rid of some stuff.
Like what?
Well, sorry to say I got rid of Lucy Liu, the rhododendron.
Really?
Because you always like to say the actress.
Yeah.
No, we can't do that anymore, Steve. Sorry.
Why'd you yank it up?
It's looking a little puny.
Oh.
Well,
you're harsh. It doesn't even go to some rehabilitation center. It's just gone.
It does not. There is no room for rehabilitation in my garden. So, and quite a few of the carpet of Labrador violets is coming up too. Labrador violets. See, you know what? I didn't plant them. They came in on something. And the thing about ground covers is they want to cover the ground.
Yeah.
And we don't always want them to. So I.
And then they don't want to go away. After
well, they don't. And I don't expect them to go away completely. I pretend that they're going to go away completely. And then they come back. That's all right.
Lamium.
Oh, Lamium.
I made the mistake.
No, I don't have
planting that.
Yeah.
That was a mistake.
We all have our mistakes.
Yeah. We're doing some stuff. So I had to move basically all my backyard, which is a shade garden. I had to move almost everything.
Wow.
And finding little places for all these delicate ferns and the like has been a chore. But my sister's there and she's taking it on. She's been doing it.
Perfect. My sister was visiting and I put her to work.
Yeah.
Excellent.
She's a better gardener than me, so it's good. What were you going to say about snags? I interrupted you.
Oh, with the snags in the city, I know people that have had snags in the city. And the thing important thing to consider is something becomes a hazard when it has a target, if there's nothing for it to hit. So do a little bit of math. Figure out the distance to things. But oftentimes snags rot and decompose from above. They don't necessarily just crumble at the base and the whole thing falls over. So they can...
I see. All right. Our number, by the way, to talk to our friends, Lisa Taylor, Greg Rayburn, Marty Wingate, who writes at MartyWingate.com and has a novel coming out shortly, also has a book, Landscape for Privacy, So this is a different number than the call-in number, and I know you can do both. 206-543-5869, if you have a question for them, or 1-800-289-5869. That's for that. Don't forget to call the other number, 206-543-9595, or pledge online, kuow.org, to show your support and to help us reach our goal of $10,000 by the end of the hour, which is, 28 minutes away. But right now you can give us a call and ask some questions or comments or thoughts. Or you can email us, weekday@kuow.org. What should be happening in the vegetable garden right now, madam?
Well, depending on your microclimates, I think right now planting out starts that I have been raising inside since late February, so all my lettuces and little starts of cilantro. A lot of the perennial flowers that I planted or things that have overwintered are starting to get a little bit more robust. I have a nice crop of overwintered beets and carrots, and we talked about the brassica flowers, and there's this giant collard plant in my front yard that is just about, it looks like the Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors. It's forming all these little buds about ready to burst into flowers all over. And so that's pretty fun. So chard, all the cool winter crops are going in. I really think onions, your onion sets or onion starts go in now and give them a good shot of liquid fertilizer with a high nitrogen content so they can really get growing.
And then step back.
That's right. Whoa.
The cool weather plants, did you say?
Yeah, yeah. The spinach and, brassicas, arugula.
Because we don't have summer yet.
No, that'll be later. The summer crops go in at the end of May, beginning of June.
We're lucky to have what we have, I think.
Yeah.
What are you doing with the natives right now, Greg Rayburn?
Well, despite following my own advice, I am still doing a little bit of planting, but I am marking them so that I remember to water them during the summer months.
Ah, yes.
But I just I really need to reduce my pot collection. I will actually transfer my pot collection that actually has vegetation into it and make them all empty so that I can actually clear out some space for more garden, because I need to put in some veggie beds where my capillary beds are, where I keep my plants, my pots.
Your capillary beds.
Those are those lined beds that are full of mulch, and you put, during the summer months, you put your containers in them and have the drain holes filled, covered with a mulch. So that way you can just water into the bed and your plants get watered from the bottom up as they wick the water through their drain holes. So it's a really efficient way of watering potted plants during the
summer. I do that with a kiddie wading pool when we go on vacation. Mm-hmm. But I don't probably have quite as many pots as you do, Greg.
I'd probably need 15.
Really?
15.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and the aesthetics of those kiddie pools.
I'm on vacation. I don't see it.
What are you putting in, Marty? You said you were taking things out. What
I
are you putting
in? I got a lovely, at the early spring NHS plant sale, I got a lovely wallflower called Winter Sorbet, and it's blooming now, has clusters of... The flowers change. So in one cluster, they'll be kind of an orange and mauve-y color and a deep maroon. And it'll bloom for quite a while now. It'll bloom the rest of this month. And yes, we are April. Yeah, it'll bloom the rest of this month. What month is it? It's amazing how I can find spaces for things I didn't find. I got a rock rose.
Really? You found a space for a rock rose?
Sorry, I got a sun rose.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a little bit different. Helianthemum, which is low growing. It's called Wisley Primrose. It's a yellow one. And I put that in a really hot spot at the top of the retaining wall so it'll get some warmth.
What's it called? Wisley?
Primrose.
Wisley Primrose?
So it's a yellow.
It's a good name for your next... Wisley character Primrose. In your next novel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thanks, Steve. I'll make a note of that.
Wisley Primrose.
You always need good character names.
That's a good one. All right, Greg brought up a question from Claire, who's volunteering in the pledge room. We just cut down an overgrown photinia. What would you suggest as a replacement to screen between two houses? We've got about 8 to 10 feet, right? 8 to 10 feet width to work with. Screen size about 15 feet long. So she didn't like the photinia.
So cutting down a photinia and getting rid of a photinia are two different things, because it will sprout from the stump. So probably the first thing that you do is grind the stump. And in a narrow space like that, there are some narrow yews that will provide evergreen cover that grow about 12 feet high. Hicksii grows.
Takes a while, or do they grow fast?
Well, yew is not the fastest growing plant in the world, so I would get big plants. Azara microphylla, which takes part shade if you are concerned about that, has little tiny leaves and grows quickly and can be cut back hard or branches can be taken off and it'll fluff out again. That makes a really nice screen.
All right. Does that one smell like chocolate chip cookies?
Yeah, it's great. It just finished blooming, so it blooms in late winter and smells wonderful.
All right. And I thought maybe like a yellow privet might be nice, too.
Yeah, I'm not wild about privet myself. Yeah. They smell a little skunky to me. But some people love
privet. They grow slow, and they're easy to maintain. Yeah. That yellow one is kind of striking.
Mm-hmm. Got a native?
Well, if you have some shade going, you can go with evergreen huckleberry. You can also go with a tall Oregon grape as a nice evergreen. And we also have native yew, although it grows tremendously slow.
Yes, indeed.
How long would the tall Oregon grape take to grow up to that height?
They can grow once they get their roots down after year 3, then they really start putting on new.
And fruit. How high does it grow?
So it can get up to 9 feet tall in the right conditions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they get a bit leggy. And there's also cultivars of Mahonia that may grow a little bit faster.
All right, there's a start. She got her question answered because she came into the pledge room to ask it, and that's why that happened. You may have your question answered on the Facebook page, Weekday on KUOW, which these guys attend to. You may have it answered when you call in to that call-in number. You may have it answered when you email us in. Right now, we are calling you out of your garden.
and asking you to call and support this public radio service, this public radio segment, this public radio station at 206-543-9595 or 1-866-677-5869. Katie Sewell, we have to raise $2,605 in 20 minutes. We can do that if 20 people call and pledge $100?
I think so. There's at least 20 people listening. In fact, there's probably thousands of you listening.
Yes, and so many of you thousands have been members, and we thank you for that. But if you are not a member or would like to renew, excellent time.
Why not? 206-543-9595. I mean, think of all the gardening knowledge that's actually in this room. I'm sitting in there thinking, how do they know all this stuff? I'm just out there, like, you know, messing my way around the garden and being like, I hope it doesn't matter if I cut this off.
Because we've been a master's class in gardening for the past 20 years.
I know. And that's the service that KYW provides. And I know a lot of you gardeners out there look forward to this segment. And we're asking you to also pledge your support for this segment with a monetary donation to this station.
Have we mentioned that Greg, Marty, and Lisa volunteer their time?
Well, we haven't, but we have now.
Because your just compensation is that we thank you at the end of each hour.
We love it.
And that is because you're part of the community. The community of gardeners, community of listeners. I mean, could you garden without, you know, some radio show on the weekend blaring in your ear? I don't know if you do that, and I've never asked you. Do you walk around your vast estates with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me in your ears?
No, usually once I go outside, it's all listening to the birds.
Oh, well, that's better.
Well, it keeps me outside longer because I put the KOW in the ear pod, and then I just keep working.
Yeah, I'm that way.
You know, through
too.
American Roots, and then pretty soon it's dark.
Yeah,
my American
and
Roots.
I'm listening
getting...
to those guys with that rock and roll show late on Sunday.
Sound Opinion.
How did I end up still being outside in the garden?
And how did you? Wow, you are working.
I got busy.
See, I used to gear myself around Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. But then now I lay in bed. But I used to get up and garden to Wait, Wait, because that was fun, because it would make me laugh. And then, of course, people see you in your garden laughing. And they think
yes.
You are crazy. So if that's happened to you, 206, this is how you can relate. We would like you to relate by pledging your support. 206-543-9595.
I went so far as to be able to work outside with a Walkman that could happen to pick up the radio because I didn't have the ability to put it on my iPod for a while. I do now. So I have marched into the 21st century. But back in the day, I used to carry around the old Walkman with the tape player just because it still had a working radio on it.
That's great.
And I'm sure some of you are like that, too. 206-543-9595, the number to give us a call. Show your support for this radio station and for this particular segment, Green Days on KUOW.
We will not dilly-dally because we have some questions to get to, but we do want you to pledge your support, help us meet our goal, show your support, and call 206-543-9595 right now. Renew, you'll feel better. Become a new member, you'll feel great. You'll garden differently. It's just like little sprouts. Give us a call.
Support for KUOW comes from Sodo Hydro, specializing in indoor and outdoor gardening supplies and hydroponics, featuring grow lights, General Organics, Sunshine Mix, and more. Coming soon, Baker Creek Seeds, located south of the stadiums. Product information at sodohydro.com.
53 degrees in Seattle, mostly cloudy. Forecast says clouds all day, chance of light rain, and an afternoon high of 58.
Support for KUOW comes from Third Place Books. Author Cheryl Strayed tells the story of her solo journey along the Pacific Crest Trail in Wild from Vintage. She reads and discusses on Wednesday, April 3rd, 7 p.m. at Third Place Books in the Lake Forest Parktown Center.
All right, let's get a little more gardening in on this day. While you're calling, 206-543-9595, help us make our goal. Let me go to Donna. She's South Seattle, thinking about lime trees, huh, Donna?
Yeah, I've had one. Well, after I sold my house, I decided I really wanted to have a real garden. So I plant perennials in pots on my deck. And I've had a lime tree for 5 years. And I actually got fruit and everything. But this year, this winter, over winter, it got scale. And it is... 95% of the branches are covered, you know, just covered with scale. I've used neem on it, and I would like to stay organic. Can you recommend anything I can use?
Is it real big? Can you reach most of the branches?
Well, the tree is maybe 5'8", because it's taller than me.
Okay, but you can reach most of it.
Yeah, all of it.
Because I had some scale on a cornice moss, and I just picked them off.
Yes,
with my fingers. I just scratched them off and collected them in a little thing and a little cup and stuck them in the freezer, because I wanted to do them in.
Uh-huh.
But that, I didn't see them come back after that. They're pretty interesting. And then I went to the internet and I learned all about scale because it's a very curious and interesting creature.
Yeah, and you could use some horticultural oil probably, but you would have to time it.
Yeah, the timing, I think dos manos, you know.
Using Neem in February.
Yeah, the other thing is to give the garden hotline a call, because they could certainly tell you the time frame. But I think, you know, if you don't damage the bark, just picking those off, they usually come off pretty easily when they're soft like that. Yeah, and I think a ladybird beetle, there's a particular ladybird beetle that feasts on those. So, yeah, one of them. I'm not sure which of the 250 of the species likes those. But, yeah, it's our favorite ladybug, one of our favorite ladybugs that likes to eat those. So,
pick them off, though.
Pick them off. Well,
I didn't know cornice moss.
But I would start.
Yes.
I didn't know it did either, but I noticed them
on. And on a lime tree, they're probably on the underside of the leaves, too, but it's an evergreen leaf. I mean, it's a kind of a waxy cuticle, so it should be easy to pick them off.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what I'd try.
All right, Donna. Thanks for that. Jim's in Edmonds. Hi, Jim.
Hello. How is everyone today?
Oh. Good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Happy pledge drive.
Thank you.
I have a question about leeks that I planted last year in a nice garden, and I didn't thin them, so they were very crowded and they grew up very stunted. Well, they're in fine shape right now. Mm-hmm. Are they okay to just plant and then harvest when they get to, you know, big size and thin them out like I should have done last year?
No, just eat them.
Eat them.
Yeah, because I think those are going to send up their flower stalk as soon as it starts warming up.
Because
they've been around. Because they've been around the block. Yeah, their time is up. But eat them.
All right, eat them. Fair enough. Eat the leeks. And Genevieve in West Seattle, a dogwood tree.
Yes, I planted a dogwood tree. I'm a new gardener, and I planted a dogwood tree about 2 years ago. It's almost 3 years old now, and I planted it completely west-facing. And so last year it didn't do very well. I just don't think it got enough water. So what I wanted to do was move it and then plant a cotoneaster, the kind of cotoneaster that becomes tall like a tree. And I just need to know when to move it. If I can move it now, or do I have to wait till the fall?
I would wait till the fall. I would wait until November.
What should she do for in the west-facing summer that we are going to get blasted with?
Yeah, I'd make sure to keep it watered especially once you get into July, August, and even early September. Oftentimes we see a lot of plants really start to fade in September because
it's dry.
Depending on how the spring was, yeah, we can really still be, and it takes quite a few rains at that point to really soak the soil. So, and then this fall in October, depending on how wet it is, once we have some good saturating rains to get the soil all moist, go ahead and move that.
But why does it need to be? I mean, does the dogwood just not like the west facing?
They are forest edge. This is a pink flowering dogwood, I would assume, or, you know, even our native dogwoods. They're kind of forest edge plants. And so west facing, especially west facing, if it's close to the house, that increases the heat and the light. And that can, and if you don't keep them well watered, then that can dry them out, stress them.
I see. I see. All right. Get you started. You can. We got some lines open to 206-543-5869 or 1-800-289-5869. If you have questions for Lisa Taylor, Marty Wingate, or Greg Rayburn, I do get those numbers.
I heard that little hesitation. Yeah. I don't see how you keep them straight.
Well, I have them written down, and I just have to remember to speak slowly enough to say, yes, pledge your support at 206-543-9595. Or 1-866-677-5869. And you should probably write them down, too. We're close. We're close.
So close.
1,600.
That was very exciting, Steve.
You wait till...
Tally number four.
Wait till we meet. Exciting. We'll meet our goal.
Oh.
We'll meet our goal in a moment. And then we will get there. All right. Let me... Barbara, did I not let you finish? Barbara, are you there?
Yes, I'm here from South Seattle. Oh. I didn't actually start my question.
Oh, yet. No. That's right. Good. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
Great. No worries. Actually directed a little bit more towards Greg. I've got a small piece of land in South Seattle that I it's an environmentally critical area, and so I have a plan from King County about what plants to plant, native all. And I was wondering if you could put me in contact with someone who could help with placement so it looks more like a forest and not so much landscaping.
Yeah, so that's, you're welcome to send me an email if you just Google me. It's pretty easy to get, and I can send you a list of resources. I have some different, whether or not you want to hire it out or else some do-it-yourself information I can send on over to you. If you go to also our online, we have our native plant landscaping guide. I don't know if you've discovered that yet, but on that, there are a whole bunch of different planting plans that we did that have different species arranged certain ways. So that's also a good place to start and kind of stimulate different ideas.
You are pretty easy to find. Greg Rayburn, R-A-B-O-U-R-N. You do show up in the King County online directory.
Yes.
Because that is your job.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear I'm still on there. You never know.
Anything else? Barbara, did you get what you wanted?
I did, yeah. It's just there's a little bit of a steep slope, and where it comes down to is Taylor Creek, and Seattle owns that part of it, so I'm trying to keep it, you know, as native as possible, totally native, so I'll definitely email him and maybe get some ideas of placement.
Great.
I've got about 200 plants I need to plant.
Hey, warms my heart here when people are taking good care of their critical areas and planting native plants.
Now you can whoop. We made our goal there.
And then some.
Yes.
Yay.
Very nice. Very nice.
All right.
You know, none of us have enough pocket rim shot sound effects. We should all be walking around with those at all times. All right, let's keep going. That's great. So all we can keep going a couple more minutes here. Let me go to Ben in Burien. Oh, Ben, what are you trying to control?
Good morning. I have a raspberry plant or shoots in my backyard in the garden area. And that sucker just keeps spreading every year. And trying to see if maybe I can control it some way to prevent it from kind of taking over the whole garden or even possibly the best way to remove some of it.
Just plunge that shovel into the soil and yank out the canes. That's the best way to do it. Just keep it, at least it's not bamboo.
Right. I was thinking a bamboo barrier, though, might be a way if he really does want to corral it in, you know, to sink an 18-inch barrier. Because I think those
of dead bamboo.
No, the
it's
yes. Like a flashing.
Liners. Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Liners.
I just
yes. Don't put the bamboo in. Just, that would work.
Maybe
it's true.
A lot of work.
Raspberries do like to spread, and often if they're at the fence line, your neighbor benefits because then they start creeping over the fence line. But the neighbor didn't even have to plant them.
But they're pretty easy to control with a shovel.
Yeah, I dig them up and put them in a pot and give them to the neighbors. It's a great way to share and create community, and you know, you just have more things to love.
Does that help you, Ben?
Off season, it would want to trim the shoots or the strands to help it for the following spring.
When does your raspberry fruit?
Late summer, so like late July, August.
Just once?
Yes.
Well, it sounds like what we call everbearing. And I used to have Heritage, which they called everbearing, that if I left it alone would produce a light crop in summer and then a light crop in August, September. But I always cut it all to the ground in late winter and got one big late crop, and that was the easiest thing. I always look for the easy way out.
But late summer. I mean, late winter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Perfect. All right. Thanks for your help. Love the show. Good luck with the drive.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Marvin's in Covington. Hi, Marvin.
Morning.
Morning.
Hey, I've got a question. I've got some fresh cow manure from High Grass in Enumclaw, great manure, and it's been mixed with sawdust, and I'm not sure it's been aged 6 months or 8 months, maybe a year, and it's not clumpy or anything, but I actually have an overdose. So I have a garden on too much manure. And so I'm trying to figure out what I can plant in it. So I understand because it has high nitrogen and whatnot, I can't plant carrots. But my question is, what about leeks, onions, peas, pumpkin, squash, bean, potatoes, or beets?
Well, that's his
nope.
List.
Yeah. Not the beets.
Not the
so beets. the root crops don't like high nitrogen. They get all hairy, yeah. So they're hard to right. eat and hard to harvest. All those like the leeks and anything you're growing for the greens is going to like a lot of nitrogen.
Compost.
Sounds like it's been sitting for a while, so it may not be super hot.
Yeah, and composted cow manure isn't really high in nitrogen.
Yeah.
And once it's fully composted, you're so I would
6 months is enough.
Yeah. Well, if it doesn't, it shouldn't really look like manure. That's how you know it's composted. It shouldn't smell like manure. Mm-hmm. It should just look more compost-like. And at that point, it shouldn't be high nitrogen.
And you want to plant straight into it? Is that what you're talking about?
I mixed it already with, uh-huh. with other soils I had and sand and whatnot. So would leeks and onions be a good choice?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, what about peas?
The peas are going to like it fertile, but I think you might get more green than fruit. So
pumpkin squash?
Pumpkin squash are pretty heavy feeders, so I think they would love it.
They'd love it. Okay, beans?
Beans don't need it that fertile, but sure, they wouldn't. They could, you know, again, you might have really big beans.
All right, that's good.
Really big plants. Build really big trellises.
Okay, I'll keep my potatoes, beets, and carrots out of there then.
Yeah.
Great.
Sounds fun.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot. Spring is coming. That's what we know. I noticed that Greg Rayburn is going to be presenting a favorite Northwest Natives for Sun and Shade this Saturday in Issaquah on the Green Days. KOW Green Day's Facebook page.
Yes. Looking forward to it.
Savvy Gardener Classes
mm-hmm.
at savingwater.org so we can all learn things.
And if you want to read up on things, the Miller Library is having its garden book sale this Ooh. Weekend at the Center for Urban Horticulture, MillerLibrary.org. They have the most amazing collection of books to sell this year that huge libraries were donated to them. I mean, personal libraries.
Yeah, yeah.
So go.
All right.
Go
by. Do you have an institution that you would like to tout?
Well,
Tilth doing right now?
We're doing classes and gearing up for the May sale. And if you pick up a copy of April's Parent Map, I am someone you should know.
All right, then.
In that magazine.
See, these are all ways that our community works together to better ourselves. And that's what we do here at KUOW. We're all part of the same community, right? We answer questions. We learn things. We find out about events. We educate ourselves. And then we ask you to, twice a year, we say, can you take a time to pledge your support?
206-543-9595. I'm Katie Sewell. I'm back.
It's good to see you. Are you taking these guys away?
Yeah.
Well, I'm thankful.
They're heading on out.
All right. Greg Rayburn, Marty Wingate, Lisa Taylor, thank you all. Thanks for helping us meet our goal. It never stops, though. That's the
Here
thing.
Comes.
It never
well,
stops.
Oh, that's so exciting. Highlight of my day.
Mine, too.
Well, Thomas Lee said he pledged as a KUOW Evergreen member because of this gardening panel.
There you go.
So thank you, Tom.
And see you guys next week.
Thank those of you gardeners who I have yet to call at 206-543-9595. Pledge your support for this segment to this station, to Weekday as a show in general, 1-866-NPR-KOW, the toll-free number, 1-866-677-5869, or go online, kow.org. And Steve, we have a
Ma'am.
Special gift this hour to see Susan Orlean. Oh, you also had a special gift this hour. I'm giving away a thank you gift as well. Susan Orlean at Benaroya Hall on May 14th. We only have a couple pairs of tickets left at the $200 level. And I was thinking, Steve, some people may not know who Susan Orlean is.
Yeah, here we are spouting it out. Like, who is this woman who's a good writer and wrote about Rin Tin Tin and orchids?
Yeah, so here's a little insight into her. She was asked by the Huffington Post how she begins her writing process once she receives a magazine writing assignment.
First, I would procrastinate, since that's a huge, it's kind of the key to my work process. I always regret every assignment the minute it gets accepted because I'm fundamentally very lazy. They're all just one big blur of misery.
See? See? She's very humorful from the clips I was watching.
She's very humorous, and she's just like you or me right now. You procrastinate calling and pledging your support to KOW. Get a pair of tickets at $200 to see her talk, make more jokes, talk about Rin Tin Tin,
yes.
Orchid Thieves.
Well, you know, it's nice to get out on the town, and it's nice to support KUOW. And if you can do both at the same time, if you can give $200 to this
station.
That's
a win-win, Katie.
That breaks down to $16, a little less than $17 a month, $200. So if we are worth $17 per month to you, give us a call, 206-543-9595. Pledge at the $200 level to pick up the last remaining pairs of these tickets. They will be going away at 10 a.m. So this is your opportunity.
The Gardeners have saved you $17 a month, I'm sure, just through their careful analysis of what's happening in your soil and their suggestions for whimsy primrose and the like.
Well, and they give you a guide of what to buy and what not to buy. I mean, how many of us have bought something that we thought would be a good thing and you, in practical purpose, was not the right thing at all for your garden?
And they ground us in the Northwest with native plants, with seasonal information. At KUOW-FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.